Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Dave Smoley to the broadcast. Since 2013, Dave has been the Chief Information Officer of AstraZeneca, the $25 billion global innovation-driven biopharmaceutical business that focuses on the discovery, development, and commercialization of prescription medicines. Prior to AstraZeneca, Dave served as Senior Vice President and CIO of Flextronics, a global manufacturing services firm. He also spent time as a divisional CIO at Honeywell, as well as at General Electric. Dave is a 2013 inductee into the CIO Magazine Hall of Fame. He also has a Bachelor of Science in Computer Science from Clemson University and an MBA from the University of Virginia. I recently caught up with Dave by phone in London, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed recruiting in light of the growth and restructuring the company's experienced. Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed moving more of the company's infrastructure to the cloud, and merging technology, innovation, and enterprise architecture, as well as project portfolio groups. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discuss the means by which Dave aligns IT strategy with business outcomes. And Principle 5, external partnerships, as we discussed AstraZeneca's insourcing of many aspects of IT, rethinking the use of external partners, and saving significantly along the way, among a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Dave Smoley, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. It's great to talk with you again. You are the Chief Information Officer of AstraZeneca, and you have been in the throes of quite a significant IT transformation. I thought we would begin with just kind of an overview of the nature of the transformation. If you could take a brief walk back down memory lane as to sort of what you found and what your diagnosis as to the change that was necessary.
Great. Thanks for the opportunity. So about 3 years ago, a little more than 3 years ago, when I joined AstraZeneca, the business was in a turnaround situation. Like many large pharma companies, we had a large number of blockbuster drugs that were multi-billion dollars in revenue and profit that were coming to the end of their patent protected life. And that meant that those revenues were going to drop off, and it was important to replace them with new revenue sources, new drugs. And so we were in a turnaround situation of building the pipeline and managing the transition from these old drugs to the new drugs. Very challenging time for the company. And on top of that, making it worse, the IT infrastructure was not performing in a way that was helpful. This quick diagnosis was that the work had been outsourced in sort of aggregate and then re-outsourced again. So about 10 years ago, they took all of IT and gave it to one service provider who couldn't perform, you know, satisfactorily for the business. So they then looked at that as a procurement problem and decided to split the work up amongst what they called an ecosystem of providers. So we then had 6 to 8 different service providers doing different parts of the IT ecosystem. And that's where we were 3 years ago. And it wasn't working, if you can imagine, because to run or build or do anything in IT required between 3 and 8 different service providers to be involved. So there were an awful lot of handoffs, very bureaucratic. It's a tough, highly regulated industry. So there has to be a lot of documentation and sort of validated processes, which exacerbated that complexity. It was very expensive. It was very slow. And there was an awful lot of sort of finger pointing at the issues. And there wasn't really a good, healthy discussion around what was broken and how we could fix it. So we set about really quickly focusing on five key items that were sort of the pillars of our strategy. One is we focused on the customer. We made it clear to the organization, a lot of this was just a cultural and a mindset shift, that, you know, the most important thing is the customer, and that customer might be a patient or a healthcare provider, but more typically for IT, it's another part of the business, maybe even another part of IT, or another part, you know, another function that we're doing work for to enable them. And we have to understand who that customer is, what drives value for them, and how we're either helping or hurting that. The second thing was a commitment to operational excellence. You know, the outsourcing trend of the 90s and early 2000s was, in some ways, in retrospect, you know, an abdication of responsibility. It was done by companies who said, hey, we're not in the IT business, we'll leave that to someone else. But the reality is that when you're a company as big as AstraZeneca, the number of people and the amount of money that's spent in that area is more than many technology companies, and more important than many other parts of the business to success. And we were feeling the pain of not doing it well. So we said, look, we have got to commit to being excellent in running IT. We have to understand how to measure it, how to improve it, how to simplify it, and how to be successful as an IT shop. The third thing was technology leadership. So understanding the rapid pace of change in technology, who are those companies that are leading the way? How do you partner with them? How do you identify and apply those technologies into your business? The fourth was focusing on collaboration, both with cross IT and across the business. That was something we needed to do better, and then simplifying. We used those five pillars: the customer, operational, IT operational excellence, technology leadership, simplification, and collaboration. Those were the five pillars, Peter, that we focused on to turn things around. And our strategy was then really to bring the work in-house, to sort of unwind this eight different partners who were created all these handoffs. So we greatly simplified, brought that work in-house, and at the same time, we moved quickly to, you know, what was then sort of leading edge technology, which was primarily a big push to get into the cloud through some of the leading software as a service providers, and in some cases, moving part of our infrastructure into the cloud as well, and just greatly simplifying and consolidating the number of data centers, the number of servers, number of applications that we had across the landscape.
Just as you have five pillars, IT transformation, I know from our past conversations, you have a 6-point cloud toolkit. We'd love for you to give a bit of an overview of that, as it's another area I know you've put a lot of thought into as you've transformed this organization.
The 6-point cloud toolkit is pretty basic too. The first thing is start with a business problem. A lot of people talk about cloud as the answer, but you can't talk about cloud as the answer unless you know what the question is first. So along with our five pillar strategy, the question really starts with the customer, right? What is the problem that the customer has got? And then how can we solve it? So point one is define the business problem. Point two is use proven tools. There are a lot of tools out there that are widely accepted. Many companies are running on them, you know, huge success. So if I look at, for us, it was Workday, ServiceNow, Box, Office 365, DocuSign, there's Concur, and many, many more probably. These are tools that are leaders in their space. They're highly innovative companies. They are companies you can develop a close partnership with because they're continuously improving their tools and technology. And so once you know what the problem is, you know, what I suggest is you go to those proven tools. And if you don't find one, then you start to ask around and figure out through your network who does know of a tool that's out there that you can use. The third in that toolkit would be set ambitious goals. You're not going to achieve transformation in your company by setting comfortable, easy, safe goals. You need to stretch and need to push the organization, yourself, your team to think out of the box. You know, when we started 3 years ago, for example, we said we wanted to be twice as good for half the cost. And at the time, people said, that's crazy. I mean, how do you literally cut your cost by 50%. And by the way, at the same time, perform better and do more. And so at the time, you know, we set that goal because it was a crazy goal, but it got people discussing if it was possible and why and how and what could we do. And I'm happy to say that after 3 years, we actually in 2017 are going to achieve the half the cost, and we've more than exceeded the double the good. We clearly have areas where we can improve more, but setting those kinds of stretch goals got us way further than if we had just sort of set a comfortable trajectory of, you know, 10% reduction and things like that. So the third thing is set ambitious goals. The fourth thing is don't hold back. You have to go big. You have to be all in once you commit to these things. And, you know, it's good to start small and build up through experiments, because you don't want to find out that there's going to be failure. There's some reason why these tools won't work for your company. But then again, you can't be timid about it. So when we went with DocuSign, for example, I mean, we've gone quite big in terms and ambitious in terms of the number of envelopes or digitally signed documents that we're trying to implement. So that's the fourth thing. The fifth thing was really changing the relationship, making sure that you're able to build a trusted partnership with the business. Typically, in history, companies have had kind of a buy-sell relationship with their vendors. They've also had a bit of a buy-sell relationship with IT. Here's my requirements. Here's what's broken. I need you to fix it. And, you know, a bit of sort of being an order taker and a chaser and a fixer as opposed to an engaged strategic partner. And so changing that relationship is critical to the next phase, the next level of IT partnership with the business. And that comes from building credibility through cleaning up and doing the foundational things, running a network and compute and storage that is reliable, that's efficient. But also then, once you get that beyond things breaking, then you're able to get into the conversation around where can we do innovative things? Where can we drive for competitive advantage through the application of technology? The sixth part of the toolkit really is partnering with innovators. When you look at some of those companies I mentioned, those toolkit companies like Workday is a great one that for me has been a terrific innovator to partner with over the years. There are many more. I mean, clearly when you look at an Amazon or a Google as the real future leaders in the tech space, these are companies that you want to partner with. And I call it partner because there may or may not be a buy-sell aspect to that relationship. I mean, eventually I would expect you would have a buy-sell relationship, but it's not like those relationships in the past when you negotiate and agree to just buy a product or a series of products. This is an ongoing relationship where you are, through the course of a year, in close contact at the architect level, maybe at the project leadership level, at the service level, around what's working, what's not working, what the future could mean for you as a company and for your partnership. So these guys are pushing the boundaries in security, cybersecurity. They're pushing the boundaries in cloud computing and hybrid, in the ability to move large workloads around and provide better metrics and better visibility and so on. And so your ability to kind of help direct them and also take their direction on where things is going is key to success. So those are the six parts of that toolkit, Peter.
Thank you for walking through that, Dave. As I think about the amount of change that you've just described from the transformation, insourcing, the move to a variety of cloud partners, so engaging new partners, no doubt changing the way in which, from legacy tools to these more modern tools, an enormous amount of change exerted in just 3 years. Can you talk a little bit about the way in which you thought about rolling through that change so that it was digestible to the organization? I mean, you mentioned a moment ago, you know, set ambitious goals and don't hold back. And so I imagine it was probably fairly aggressive that you erred on the side of being aggressive. But how did you think about the change management associated with this?
Change management is, I think, one of the fundamental keys to success in IT. As large company IT, we are typically, I mean, we're absolutely enablers of the business, but quite often we're, transformative enablers. And, you know, whether it's a business turnaround as it was in AstraZeneca, when I joined, or whether it's just sort of transforming a particular function or a particular process, the application of technology typically does drive that kind of change. And so it's really important that change management be something that we consider our core competency and something that we are constantly trying to get better at. It's not something that we're typically good at. Most IT organizations that I've been in have been inadequate in this area. We're largely, computer scientists and tech guys tend to be a bit more introverted than extroverted, and yet change management requires an awful lot of front of the parade, arm waving, discussing, listening, those kinds of consultative behaviors where it's super important to understand who are the stakeholders, what do they have at stake, and how can you optimize the outcome. That said, along the lines of some of those points of setting ambitious goals and don't hold back and those sorts of things, I think that the approach we took was we were very clear up front in setting these ambitious goals. We then were able to define how we would do that. So 3 years ago, we set a high-level 3-year plan for how much cost we would take out, how much improvement we would see in what areas, and then how we would actually do that. And we were able to then move very quickly. I was blessed in this role to have a CEO who was a transformative leader as well. He was absolutely supportive and encouraging and challenging as well, but he wanted to make this change. And therefore, when the going got tough, he could provide the feedback, but he was also right there supporting us. So that was key. And we spent a lot of time. The way that our team is organized, our IT team here, is aligning with the business. So every senior executive has got a dedicated IT leader. And that IT leader and their team has end-to-end accountability for the systems and the IT that to that business unit. The performance, the cost, the quality, the strategy, end to end. And then behind those sort of what we call the front end business teams, the customer facing business teams, is a shared service that is software, hardware, infrastructure, enabling, program management, agile, all those sorts of things, lean, that sort of provide services to the front end to make sure that they're able to deliver. And so I think the change management part really comes from staying close to the business and the customer and engaging them in a very responsive way around how things are going. And then, of course, the IT organization, in our case, we insourced a tremendous amount of work, which means the number of people that we have in IT at AstraZeneca has tripled over the last 3 years. But it's also been a shift where we've, in some cases, as we reskilled and relocated to be more global and to be more technically oriented versus service management oriented, there have been, parts of the organization, places where the IT population has gone down and other places where it's gone up. So it's really important to manage that process with a lot of transparency, help people to make smart decisions about their future, their career, and to do that in a very empathetic and partnering sort of way.
I want to go back into your ambitious goal of IT needing to be twice as good at half the cost. And the fact that you're actually going to realize that vision, it sounds like 3 to 4 years into your journey, remarkably. Can you, the extent to which you can share, can you talk a bit about how that cost savings has been broken down, even maybe in high level, broad brush strokes? And then, of course, the important part of it, the ways in which you've increased the throughput and productivity of IT along the way in the process?
Well, the first thing is to understand what your cost is. Not many organizations have a handle on total IT cost. It's not unusual for cost to be, largely in IT, but then to have other parts. It could be shadow IT, or it could be knowingly separated, whether it's in a market as opposed to centrally, or if it's in functions or maybe even managed through third-party contracts through other functions. But, we started by getting an inventory, if you will, of what all our costs were. And they were staggering, quite honestly. Back in 2013, I mean, we were close to $2 billion in total IT from a cash perspective. So this is not just the operating cost, but the capital, the restructuring, the cost of acquisitions and other, you know, factory engineering, all those sorts of things was around $1.8 billion. And we've managed to get that down. In 2017, we'll be below $900 million. So about 48% reduction, which to me is close enough to half to call it success for that ambitious goal. But we've managed, as I said, there's been a big shift. So the big shift for us was about $600 million of that at least was being spent with third-party service providers because we had outsourced our IT. And what we've done over the 3 years is really to reduce that greatly. So we're down to less than 200, we took more than $400 million out of that. And at the same time, then we've built a technology center in Chennai, India. We've built a second technology center in Guadalajara, Mexico, and hired really strong tech-oriented resources into those two locations to complement our other locations in the U.S., U.K., Sweden, China, and around the world. Those are captives. Yes, those are full-time AstraZeneca IT employees. That's been the big shift, is that shift from outsource. And I think fundamentally, third parties are helpful, but they can be overused as they were in our case. And so we're much more strategic and thoughtful about how and where we use third parties. And it would typically be in areas where it's technology that we can't find or get ourselves in a startup, or if it's in a peak sort of situation where we need the capacity for a short period of time, but we're not committed to it long term, or what we call brains on a stick, you know, where you've got something that you need to do, you don't have it internally, and you don't have the time to build it. But in general, over the years, we've found that there's almost nothing you can't do better yourself, especially when you've got the size and scale of a company like AstraZeneca. I can understand for many small companies, you just have to rely more on third parties. But for a company our size, you know, where we've got over 3,000 people in IT, that's a pretty big chunk of people. And as IT drives productivity for IT's sake, cloud is much more efficient, much less need for for capital, for infrastructure oriented people. You have a lot of efficiency through increasingly automation, machine learning, those sorts of things. Then you can not only, when you bring the work in, do you save from the profit you're paying someone else, but you're also able to be a lot more efficient and effective with getting the work done. And then by putting the teams together in a way that enables them to collaborate and have career paths that span multiple groups, it's a much more enriching workplace. And it's a great way to attract people, particularly when they're coming from consulting firms or other, you know, outsourcing firms where they don't feel that connection to the product. Or in our case, they don't feel, you know, the folks who come to work at AstraZeneca are connected to saving lives. They're connected to making a difference in the world. And that's something that's great for retention and great for the quality of work life.
And the extent to which there were a number of roles you needed to create as a result of the insourcing, I can imagine it was a significant recruiting exercise. Can you talk a bit about the way in which you went about that? And I'm sure in some cases, perhaps there were folks who were rebadged, who had been working through the outsource partners, but also I'm sure some net new recruiting at scale as well. Can you talk a bit about how you went about that?
There was obviously a super heavy HR effort to think through, you know, what skills and what roles did we need and where did we want them? And then to kind of, I mean, we had at one point in the end of the first year, beginning of the second year, we had over 800 folks who had to, you know, reapply for jobs. It was incredibly disruptive and painful. But again, I think the team did a really, really good job of sharing openly with folks what the situation was going to be for the company, for the site, for the people, and then making sure that they understood their next steps and how to deal with that. In Chennai in particular, where we've onboarded from, we've gone from a green site, you know, greenfield basically, building that wasn't even completed, up to over 2,000 people and will be close to 2,500 next year. It was a function of building an HR machine. One of the first hires we brought on was a really strong HR leader and some very strong recruiters. We had an internal recruiting team. We also partnered with, you know, outside recruiters as well. In some cases, you know, we did a little bit of partnering with our third-party service providers to get started, seed the teams, you know, have some people rebadge or spend a bit of time, you know, on loan getting the team started. But really, the AstraZeneca brand and the work opportunity that we brought to that market was very, very attractive. And it still remains attractive. I mean, I think it's in a great location right out on the IT highway, but close into the city. It's a beautiful facility, definitely high end from a, you know, comparative perspective in that area. And we spend a lot of time and energy making it a fun, interesting, educational, stimulating place to work. And so we've had much lower attrition than the market, and we've been able to recruit some absolute top talent into that place through the process by which we got started. And once you get started in that way, then it sort of is self-fulfilling. Good people bring other good people along.
You've mentioned a number of trends that you see of growing importance. You mentioned machine learning, for instance. Certainly, you know, cloud computing, not necessarily a new trend, but the extent to which you've fully thought out leveraging it to your best advantage, I think, is really interesting and nuanced. Can you talk about, as you think to the future, any other trends that are kind of rising in importance, things that are making their way onto your roadmap as you look, say, 2 or 3 years out?
In our case, I think most of the interesting stuff is stuff that's already here. We're just not fully utilizing it, or we're not, or there's more places where we can utilize or we can take it more. So, for example, mobile. I mean, I think that the trend, the drive to get more of our data, our analytics, our applications onto handheld devices in every function is huge yet. And then when you think about externally, for us, working very hard to figure out how to get clinical investigators, mobile devices, how to get in the hands of our patients and healthcare providers. In our business, there's still a lot of paper, a lot of regulatory requirements for ways of working that aren't progressive. And so how we can take advantage of mobile technology. And then there's the whole, you know, next level of sensors and other sorts of things. But I think the big opportunity is just basic mobile apps that are usable. The whole major investment in UX, human behavior, sort of understanding what motivates people to do things, to stay on their medicines, to record and report information, adverse events or health, you know, metrics, things like that. So mobile's huge. I think UX human behavior is huge. Voice recognition is quite interesting. The whole Alexa phenomenon is fascinating. And I think, again, you know, there's a lot of areas where using voice recognition, using chat bots and automation, we can begin to take the mundane work out and streamline a lot of things that that aren't particularly complex. I know video has been around for a while and it's, you know, incredibly useful in our personal lives, but in the enterprise, there's more to do in terms of getting people to share via video, making it easy. Cyber is a huge ongoing challenge. It can be daunting to think of the risks to the country, to big companies and industries in that space if we're not on top of it. So that's an area that's very important, although we don't talk about it a whole lot. Those are kind of the big ones. And then, of course, the thing that's interesting about all this is to think about who are the real innovation drivers, because there may be other tech stuff that's coming that we're not even thinking about. But the Googles, the Amazons, you know, Microsoft, Salesforce, Workday, these companies are continuously, you know, investing and researching and experimenting in these areas that are driving change for their products also, and for their customers, but for the industry as a whole.
How do you and your team go about experimenting? You mentioned a number of things that are, as you point out, not necessarily kind of bleeding edge, but nevertheless, some of them, I mean, even thinking about, you know, personal technologies that are rising, like Alexa, for instance, and its application to the workplace, just to take one example of several that you mentioned. What are the ways that you and to what extent do you encourage your team to experiment and think about that some of those translation points?
It's a good question, and I like to think we're experimenting. I mean, it's just one of those things that the simplest answer is just do it. You know, whether it's buying an Alexa for yourself, buying Alexa for your staff, telling your staff or your CEO and team, I want everybody to get a Facebook account. I want everybody to get on Twitter. I want everyone to try LinkedIn or check out TechCrunch. Whatever it is, I think it's just understanding that it's important to try things, much of which can be done sort of on the personal level. I mean, a lot of this stuff is not expensive. It's available in the consumer space or on the web. And so you can, if you're passionate about it, if you're going to be in tech these days, you have to be passionate about this, which means you have to be spending time in the evening, on the weekends, with your kids, with your friends, talking about it and fooling around with it. That said, you know, within the company, we have a CTO, we have a tech innovation organization, which is in IT, and we're getting better. So 2 years ago, we hired a CTO, we committed to this tech innovation landscape, if you will, where we've got some folks in Silicon Valley, we've got some folks in Cambridge, UK, we've got some folks in Shanghai and in India that are all connected, and they're working on these tech trends. They're experimenting, they're looking at companies. We're very active in having conversations with venture capital firms and growth stage companies, not early stage. These are companies that have product, you know, have revenue, but they're trying to scale up and partner with large companies like ours. So we're very active in looking across those. We've got a full database that is used internally to kind of track who we're talking to and how that's going, but it's not easy. And so we just recently kind of reorganized a bit, and we took a lot of that early stuff, the tech innovation piece, and we actually combined it with our enterprise architecture team, with our project portfolio group, and then our delivery PMO and sort of key delivery. So we've got now an end-to-end in one team, the innovation all the way through prioritization into delivery as kind of a central center of excellence. And we put it under a real seasoned leader, one of the IT leads who had actually been running our infrastructure and operations group. So he had 3 years of credibility in fixing the guts of the organization, massive cost out, massive consolidation of data centers and servers, huge network uplift, improvement in our cyber, all that. And we shifted him over now to focus on how do we take all these innovative technologies and apply them into getting competitive advantage and achieving positive business outcome. That's kind of the next phase. And in fact, we're in conversations now. So I'm just going to be at dinner with the CEO tonight talking about how, you know, what's next. And for me, what's next is really about creating and nurturing that culture of experimentation, of getting to a better place, which is kind of an ongoing process. You know, it used to be the next thing was, well, you know, our HR systems are a mess. Let's implement Workday. Our email is failing. Let's go to cloud email. How about Office 365? You know, were these sort of specific problems that you knew needed to be fixed and you could fix them with a known solution. The next phase is we've got these technologies and technology trends that are known, and we need to figure out how we take advantage of them, because most of them are not sort of out of the box, plug it in here. Most of them can be applied in different areas depending on what you're trying to do, and you got to think differently. So there's kind of the tech trends and the business priorities need to come together with advice and perspective from outside the company, and then some sort of an ideation incubation process, greenhouse or hothouse or whatever you want to call it. Everyone seems to be doing it these days, but the ability to get these tech and business folks together, perhaps with some outside perspective, and give them the problems that need to be solved and have them run sprints to actually experiment, come up with solutions, or kind of go back to the beginning. Kind of a long answer to your question, Peter, I guess.
Thanks for giving us a look into how you're thinking about these things and how you encourage your team to do the same. Well, Dave Smoley, thank you so much for joining us on the forum on World Class IT and sharing a bit about the transformation that you've led at AstraZeneca and the ways in which you've codified some of the learnings. I think it's been a fantastic conversation.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Arman. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.